Ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back. Makes the catch!
What a play!
Wade Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise! Mercy!
This is the Shoeless Goat Podcast.
Brent Brown drops the ball! He drops the ball! 3 runs will score!
You gotta be paping me! What in the hell are you doing?
Hello and welcome back to the Shoeless Goat Podcast, off-season review. We're a Cubs, White Sox, and MLB podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Nick, and I am joined again for a third straight season by the mayor of Section 509, Patrick Wovard. Pat, how the heck are you?
Doing good, Nick. Glad to be back on here talking with you. It's certainly been a while, and I'm glad the big bosses have not canceled us yet. So definitely a good start to 2021.
I think the boss's rule is that if Twitter doesn't cancel us, then they can't cancel us. So as long as we mind our P's and Q's, I think we should be okay.
Fair enough. Just got to stay out of the Twitter jail.
So, Pat, I've got a few questions to start off. One, and you kind of answered it already, did you think we'd actually get 3 seasons when we first started this, like, 3 years ago?
I'm going to say yes, I had absolute confidence in our ability to get there. I was shooting for 20, so, you know, we're still, I don't know if we're quite on that trajectory, but we're getting there.
We're not even close, if that's what you're trying to get
at. I'm a company man.
You are. You wear it every day. Okay, more broad question. How does it feel that baseball's back as spring training's first day opened today?
It was interesting. I kept telling myself it's just spring training. I'm not going to get that excited. But when I got home today, turned on the TV, and there was a White Sox game on, I couldn't help but get a little invested. Luckily, I turned it off when it was still 3-2, and I didn't wait around to see the Brewers get out to 7-2 with Avi Garcia hitting a homer. So I at least got to see Adam Engel putting one out of left field, which was nice. So I'll just remember the good stuff. It's a nice feeling.
And you kind of rolled into my third question.
I'm just reading your mind tonight.
I know. I said, how does it feel that the White Sox haven't won a single game that they've played yet this year?
I mean, I think Tony La Russa has to be on the hot seat. Like, I don't know how you just trot that lineup out there. Adam Engel hitting third. Can't believe it.
He is a Hall of Fame baseball guy.
They're very true. Many sources have confirmed.
Great. So, yeah, it's been like kind of a weird offseason because we've basically 180'd between when we started this show team-wise and where we are now, where Cubs fans are now looking for like these small victories and these like consolation prizes and are kind of tempering their expectations, whereas White Sox fans are, you know, running through brick walls with excitement, which was kind of the opposite from when we started. So with that being said, they had two very different off seasons. I don't think the White Sox were as active as I thought they were going to be, but they still made some nice moves. Pat, do you want to lead off with that of what they did? I guess the highlights of who's new to the Sox, who's not a White Sox anymore, et cetera.
Yeah. So I think there wasn't a lot of probably in terms of subtractions, I'll start with there so I can end with more positive notes. The main notable subtraction definitely has to be Alex Colome, which doesn't hurt as much as it should with being how really freaking good he was the last 2 years, but we'll come around to that. In terms of subtractions too, obviously Ricky Renteria is no longer there at the helm. The casualty of the rebuild managerial changed now for the second time in his career, which is pretty sad on his end to be basically missing out on the success at the tail end of all the failure he had endured. So that kind of sucks for him, but that leads us into the introductions with which you mentioned too, Tony La Russa coming out of retirement after 10 years out of the bench to come manage the White Sox today in spring training. That was his first game managing the White Sox since 1986. So just let that sink in. I think
neither of us were born, mind
no,
you.
No,
not even close.
Which is crazy, which I think another notable addition, Len Casper on the radio broadcast today said there is not a single player in Major League Baseball that was alive when Tony La Russa managed his first game in 1979, I believe it was. So just let that sink in for a minute.
Get used to Len throwing those just crunchy bits at you. And
I love it already.
We will miss him dearly, but I'm glad that. So just sidetrack. He left the Cubs broadcast booth to join the White Sox radio booth, which seems like a downgrade. But when asked, it's what he's always wanted to do. And Pat Foley has anchored the play-by-play for Cubs baseball. So he had to go with, he had to switch jobs. And thankfully, he didn't have to go very far.
Sure, yeah, just a quick red line trip down to 35th and Shields. Shout out to my hat. But yeah, that was definitely a good way to get his career started. But yeah, Tony La Russa obviously now on the bench to much controversy over the offseason. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more, but I have my thoughts on that. On the player side, which is probably more important in the modern era of baseball, main additions, we have Liam Hendricks, arguably the best closer in baseball, on one of the biggest contracts in franchise history at 4 years, $54 million. So I'm saying that because he's not getting paid a $15 million buyout to not play for a Jerry Reinsdorf team. That'll never happen. And then let's see, we had, I guess, Lance Lynn, other big one, traded for Dane Dunning, the game three starter of the playoffs last year, who lasted two outs. And then Adam Eden, the man who once proclaimed Drake LaRocha as a leader of the team, is now back in Chicago. So that was an interesting one. And then I guess on the tail end of deals, if we really want to get there, Jonathan Lucroy and Tim Beckham are both in camp on minor league deals. I don't expect Tim Beckham to get anywhere, but Lucroy will probably make the team as a backup catcher. But yeah, overall pretty, I don't know, a lot of, team took a lot of flack on social media, but when you look at the moves in a vacuum, I think they all make sense. It was just maybe missing that big fish, that George Springer, Trevor Bauer, that some people may have wanted. But if the question is, did the White Sox get noticeably better as a result of this offseason? I think the answer has to be yes.
Yeah, and if anyone has any complaints about that Liam Hendricks contract, just remember that the Cubs signed Edwin Jackson to a four-year $52 million. So spend $2 million more and you probably get the best closer in baseball. So I, you know, that's all you got to say to folks like that.
Yep. Yeah, which that, I mean, and it's like, it's not, I've always, the thing about free agent money is like, it's not your money. Unless you're Jerry Reinsdorf, it's like, I don't care who he's paying. Now, the one argument that I will get is that if this actually was their budget for the offseason and they spent $54 million on a closer, that is a little weird if they like actually couldn't go up in payroll, but whatever, they got the best guy on the market. So I'm not really going to, there's been a lot of bad baseball for the White Sox and I'm not going to find a way to complain about signing the best closer in the sport.
Yeah. Don't ask Cubs fans if they care how much their ownership spends. Cause the answer is 100% yes. And the answer is not enough.
Yep.
And I guess that's a nice way to segue into what the Cubs did. So we started off with a bang by trading Yu Darvish to the San Diego Padres for pennies on the dollar, let alone we're paying a lot of his salary to go play for a contender. It reminds me of that Moneyball scene where Billy Bean's talking, I think it was David Justice, and he's like, the Yankees are playing you to be here. That's what they think of you. So apparently the Cubs think so little of their Cy Young candidate that they are going to pay for him to play in San Diego. Here's the thing. When they got rid of Starlin Castro because they didn't want to re-sign him, they spent that money on Ben Zobrist and a couple other guys. They have not and will not spend this Darvish money on anything. Nope. So that's what upsets me. If they would have said, okay, like, yeah, we're going to use the Darvish money and we're going to, like, you know, fix the bullpen and do this and that, great. But they didn't, and that's why it's more than a stupid deal.
Yeah, they'll probably put it into the hotel across the street.
Yeah, honestly, or the Harley Davidson dealership.
The money was spent.
Yeah. But in any case, moving on, we also saw the departures of these pretty much the extra innings World Series heroes in Kyle Schwarber and Albert Almora. I don't see any too big of losses there because they have been underperforming tremendously. We bid farewell to our ace, John Lester. There was this opportunity to bring him back on a team-friendly deal. The Cubs said no, and instead let him walk to the Washington Nationals to join Kyle Schwarber, actually, and Almora to the Mets. So you lose all that. To replace Kyle Schwarber, you bring in Jock Peterson on a one-year deal. I don't hate this move at all, especially because the White Sox, you know, missed out on him. No, he would have not been playing in on the South Side, so not the worst thing. What did bug me about this signing wasn't signing him. It was his, like, fake story of him talking to his wife saying, I'm going to be a Cub, like, the night beforehand, which was complete horseshit. If you don't know, he was, like, trying to think of who he wanted to sign with and then, like, just turned to his wife and was like, you know, I'm going to be a Cub tomorrow. And it's like, you know, no, it didn't happen. And if it did happen, there's a reason behind it. It's because his value is so low that there's so few teams he could have a starting outfield spot. It's basically Cubs and Cardinals, right? And then, like, the bottom feeders. So he's on a one-year deal. What I do like is David Ross said, if you're batting 150 at the All-Star break, we're going to have to make a move. So at least that, you know, the bar is that low, but it is still there. We brought back Jake Arrieta. That's huge. That's already paying dividends in the sense that he's already, like, taking Adbert Alzolay, who's probably slated to be the fifth starter, under his wing and teaching him things. I don't know how effective he will be, but his stint in Philly was nothing short of horrendous. So if anything, it's a move to get asses in the seats, if asses in the seats are in fact allowed. in the next coming weeks. So overall, not great. They re-signed Pedro Strop to a minor league deal. I think he will eventually make the team. Kind of a similar story to Jake Arrieta, except Pedro Strop consistently has been like, as much as people don't want to admit it, he has like the best, like, or your favorite stat, the most holds in Cubs history.
Best stat in baseball, man. Tell us the
also
story.
Also second lowest whip, though, so in Cubs history. For a reliever, that's pretty good. So I don't mind taking a cheap minor league flyer on him. He's one of my favorite players during the Cubs run. And, you know, get the band back together, get Starlin Castro to play second. We'll call it a day. But let's not forget the Cubs still have Hap, Contreras, Bryant, Rizzo, and Baez. So anyone who thinks that they're just going to get, you know, murked in a very weak NL Central are probably wrong. I think the Cubs will be playing competitive baseball in August, but the additions, the subtractions outweigh the additions in the squad. That's for sure. Zach Davies comes back in that Yu Darvish deal too. So on a 1 year deal too.
They'll be able to score runs. I mean, the question is ultimately going to come down to how many runs can they keep off the board?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know about that, right? Cause we've been looking at this same core, not produce offensively for the last 4 years now. And, I think it's because John Maley, who was the hitting coach, left, and they've been trying to figure out who to replace him since. They did the Chili Davis experiment, didn't work. Just ask Nick Phillips about that.
Well, I heard all about it leaving that wild card game in 17.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, because your hitting coach determines how a one game playoff is decided. But in any case, I get his frustration there. In any case, you lose John Maley, all the all the hitting technique goes to kind of hell, and these same guys all have underproduced all at the same time. It's not like one of them was struggling where the others were doing well. It's like usually only one of these five or six guys is playing really great baseball. Last year it was Ian Happ. Like, it's what it is.
Yeah, guess we'll see. I mean, but also on the Jake Arrieta note, just remember that Lucas Giolito is only as good as he is right now because James Shields taught him his changeup a few years back. So that's the value of bringing back an old veteran to the squad.
Yeah, my only thing is that Jake Arrieta's Twitter presence isn't that great. And we found out 2 days ago that Yu Darvish learned how to throw a better knuckle curve from Pitching Ninja. So if we got to get these guys on Twitter, these young guys need to get Rob Friedman.
Get him on the payroll.
Honestly, you might as well because they need it. I can name like two of their bullpen guys. So, and it's like, it's Strop and Kimbrel. Although Kimbrel had a really great end of the season last year. So if he could keep his velocity was up in the 98s, 99. So, bright spot, but you got to get to him. And even when you get to him, Cubs fans don't trust him. So
it'll be interesting to see how the Central goes this year on the NL side. I don't know. I agree with you. I don't think the Cubs are a doormat. I mean, I think the Cardinals have to be the favorite. I don't think there's any way around that, but I don't think it's – I mean, Arenado's moves the needle, but I don't think it's an immeasurable gap. I mean
– yeah, and they got rid of Fowler. They have, like, no outfield, no. Right? It's like –
it's all defense.
Yeah, it's O'Neill, Bader, and whoever else they decide to throw in there. The infield looks great, though. Goldschmidt, Arenado, DeJong, and I don't know who they even have at second base. Doesn't really matter a whole lot. Maybe they slot Tommy Edman in there or something like that. But I think Colton Wong is a Brewer now. So.
And they have a Hall of Famer behind the plate.
Yeah, exactly. No. It's going to happen. But
we'll touch on that later.
Yeah, we will.
The last 30 seconds of the show.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to move on ever so slightly after I've just been kind of rambling. But biggest head-scratcher for the White Sox offseason.
So I'm going to give mine with a caveat. I think the only acceptable answer is the La Russa move, but it's more so in the getting rid of Rick Renteria. There's been a lot of talk about La Russa, you know, the DUI and all that. And I mean, he was never going to get fired. If he didn't tell Jerry Reinsdorf about that, he would have been fired as soon as the news came out, but he wasn't. So clearly they knew. The reason I say that is because if it works and Tony La Russa is the same Tony La Russa and they win a World Series with him, it doesn't matter. If it doesn't work, like they win 75 games this year, things implode. There's always going to be the question of was getting rid of Ricky Renteria what led to that? That's all. Was that a risk worth taking for a manager? I mean, I'm going back and forth on that because watching what unfolded in Game 3 of the Wild Card Series last year in Oakland, I don't think La Russa would crumble under that pressure, which isn't necessarily fair to Rick Renteria because he never got a chance to really work through that more than the one time. And he also had like, two starting pitchers on the team. And the whole plan of the game was to go to their recent draft pick, who then hurt his forearm. So it is what it is. But I mean, personally, I think if you're asking me, do I think they win a World Series with La Russa if he's there for 3 years? I say yes. Maybe not necessarily because of him, but I think X's and O's, he's going to be better. But if it doesn't work out, this just that question is always going to be there. And then it's always going to be, why did they take the risk, especially with the connection Renteria had with the team?
Yeah, and if we're following the Ricky Renteria prophecy, they won't win this year, but they'll win next year, right? Because it's always 2 years after he leaves a team, the team will go on to win the World Series. And they also hired, I mean, the Cubs hired the oldest manager in the MLB, and now the White Sox did the same thing to replace him. So
at least Dave Duncan isn't along for the ride anymore.
Yeah, hear that. So I'll go with big. There's obviously the biggest head scratcher is Yu Darvish, but because if you look at the rotation as it stands right now, Kyle Hendricks, Zach Davies, Jake Arrieta, Alec Mills, Edward Alzolay. If you substitute Darvish for Davies, you are probably, in my opinion, if not the favorite to win the Central, damn close to it, right? Or within, you know, not 5 games back like they're predicted in many different scenarios. So to decide that you're going to rebuild and then don't, like, completely rebuild, I mean, I wouldn't like to see the Cubs go back to being an 100-loss team, and especially with, like, you know, just trading away, like, doing players dirty, like Chris Bryant, and like they will most likely do at the trade deadline. But in any case, yeah, that's probably my biggest head-scratcher. Minor head-scratcher, kind of more of an itch. Jeremy Jeffress signed with the Nationals for, I think it was, $1.25 million, and he was the linchpin of the bullpen all of last year, even though it was a shortened season. So he got the Cubs out of so many jams, and they won the division probably because of it. And you couldn't spend the 1.25 to bring him back. That's kind of ridiculous to me. I don't know. And then they signed, like, you know, they signed like Cameron Maben back for like more money. So it's like Maben's, he's good. He's a good, you know, he's a glue guy, as they say. And, you know, a crafty vet and everything you want. But I think the reason they signed Maben is because they don't believe in Jack Peterson. So
yeah, I gotta have a contingency plan.
Yeah. So that's my head scratcher for the sake of having a few of them in any case. Moving on pretty quickly. What is your bold prediction for the White Sox? I know you wanted me to go first because you wanted to think of one, but I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay, let's see. I've been thinking a little bit, and what I am going to go with is Dylan Cease making the American League All-Star team. I'm not going to say he's going to lead the league in wins. There's too much volatility in that. I'm not going to get into war because I don't know how it's calculated, and I don't want to get into the math there. But I will say is if Ethan Katz, who fixed Giolito as his high school coach, is able to unlock and get Cease to throw consistently, that guy's stuff is as good as anybody's in baseball. So I'm going to bet on the coaching staff there, and I'm going to say Dylan Cease makes the American League roster as an all-star, which, if we're writing that down in stone, if he's a Sunday replacement because somebody started right before the game, it still counts. So
yeah,
that out there. He is on the roster. That's a bold prediction.
If Mitch Trubisky is a Pro Bowler, then Dylan Cease getting in on a last-second scratch also counts. That's all I'm saying.
So, yeah, that's what I'm going with. I just think it's frustrating to watch him because it's every time it's like you see how good his stuff is and him throwing the ball 99 miles an hour and for whatever reason hasn't been able to figure out. So, I mean, the Sox need him to figure it out, so I will bet on that happening.
What's the what is the rotation as it sits right now?
So, I mean, 1-2-3, you're going to have Giolito and then some combination of Keuchel and Lynn. Probably Keuchel, then Lynn. Doesn't really matter that much, though. They might go lefty-righty. After that, it gets a little dicey. You got Cease probably entrenched in the fourth spot. He's going to have a spot. And then fifth, you're going to have either Ronaldo Lopez or Carlos Rodon, with the assumption being that Michael Kopech is either starting in the bullpen or he's going to start in the minors. I don't know which one, but that's probably the way it's going to shake out. My guess would be Rodon gets the fifth spot. Just I don't trust Lopez anymore, and he's had plenty of chances.
And Gio Gonzalez just waiting by his phone.
Hey, just getting a fourth stint with the White Sox.
Honestly, only if the Cubs are in town, right? Because he's
that one series. That was it.
Yeah, he just dominates the Cubs.
But yeah,
he's like Papa Bear, right?
Yeah, I don't know. If I kept saying this offseason, I would have liked to have somebody like him in the rotation, but just better because they tried that last year and it was freaking horrible. But
like a who am I thinking of? Like a who was like the Nationals pitcher from like U of I?
Can't think of it.
All right. It'll escape. Or like a Matt Cain, like in his late years or something like that.
Yeah, some sort of effective
Joe
swing.
Ross? Was it Joe Ross?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, you need a Joe Ross in the back.
Everybody needs a Joe Ross.
Yeah. No kidding. Okay, my bold prediction is pretty much as bold as it gets, and that is the Cubs will win the wild card game this year. That a few things have to happen. Obviously, they have to not win the division, get in the wild card game, and then beat the likes of most likely the Padres or the Dodgers, depending on who doesn't win that division. So I would, you know, if I have to play the Dodgers or the Padres in the playoffs, I want it to be in a one-game series. I certainly don't want it to be in a best of five or a best of seven. I just want to get lucky with Kyle Hendricks, have him have a nice game, and send probably one of the two most talented teams in all of baseball home in one game.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's where you would want to face him because, yeah, you roll the dice over seven games, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and they haven't won a playoff game since 2017, so it was against the Dodgers. So,
or the other hope is that they cannibalize each other in the regular season. One wins 93 games, the other wins 90, and somebody in the East wins like 95 in second place. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, that could happen.
The East, Rockies are a free win, but...
Yeah, Mets, right? Mets, Braves, Nats, all kind of vying for pretty much one playoff spot, you would think.
Yeah. It's going to be tough. It's a good time to be in the AL, I'll say that.
Yeah, the very top-heavy. What, there's three, maybe four good teams, right? So you've got Yankees, White Sox, Blue Jays, Twins, right?
Yeah, I don't know what the Astros are going to be until Verlander's back, but I don't know. I don't trust Oakland to win in the playoffs.
No, and like everyone's going to keep saying the Angels, not going to happen, you know? And then, yeah. Well, my Orioles, they were given a... 0.0% chance to make the playoffs. Not even which means it's not possible. So why even play?
Yeah. Which I don't know. I don't want to get on. There's a time and a place to get on the soapbox about why I hate rebuilds, but it's horrible as a fan to just go into the season. Like even the computer says you have literally no chance. Like it's a game.
You got to stick it on the wall in the clubhouse.
And then bulletin board material, the computers hate us.
And as soon as it shifts to like 0.5%, you need the meme, like, so you're saying there's a chance. Right? Yeah. So in any case, we're going to move on to something that we like to do, which is complain. And we've got a lot to complain about with the MLB Top 100 right now. Rankings that came out incrementally over the last couple weeks, ranking the best MLB players 100-1. Of course, it was obvious Mike Trout 1, Mookie Betts 2, and as I predicted in my blog at South Chicago, Jacob DeGrom 3. But it was the other, let's say 4-100 where I had some issues, and I think you did too. What kind of stuck out as something that was kind of bizarre to you?
The White Sox not getting 10 people. No, I mean, I was fine with 9. 9's fine. Ties the Dodgers. Okay, if we're trying to be serious here, Freddie Freeman at 4 and Jose Abreu at 31 doesn't jive quite well with me. I mean, I'm not going to be a homer. Like, Freddie Freeman is probably a better player. I think that's safe to say at this point. But a 27-rank gap between the MVPs doesn't really make sense. This is to me. Maybe it's just me. Other ones I had. Aaron Judge at 21. The dude hasn't played more than 112 games since 2017. I don't see that. Especially how if you're going to play the injury card, Stanton is 97. So I don't see how that adds up. I know we're going to probably. I'll let you talk about the catcher of a certain Los Angeles baseball franchise.
Yeah.
And then Clayton Kershaw at 38. That's just a lifetime achievement award, as far as I'm concerned.
My biggest thing with this whole thing, and it's a kind of a dumb thing to complain about because it was just a time killer in the offseason. Yep. But they didn't. If they're doing top 100 players right now, and then they're using past performance from 2016 and 17 as part of their rankings for some players and not for others. So, like, what does right now mean? I think you have to take last year's miniseason and the season before and combine those two, and that's what you get. And that would make sense for Abreu to be 31st, although he did lead the MLB in RBIs the year before, right? And, yeah, so that puts him in the top 25, in my opinion. If you're, you know, one of the best, you know, best hitters in the American League the year before, and then you're the MVP the next year. He gets in the top 25 for me. Freeman, I have no problem with him at four, but I think that you're right. The gap between the two should be a little bit less. So with that in mind, best players right now, Christian Yelich, who batted a slick 205 last year and struck out 31% of the time, was ranked ninth. That makes no sense to me. The year before, he was pretty good, and then the year before that, he won the MVP. So they put him ahead of Bellinger at 10, which I thought was kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
In any case, there was 9 White Sox and, by my count, 5 Cubs in the top 100, Darvish being the not a Cub anymore, so he would have been the highest ranked. But in any case, Hendricks at 84, and I kind of put a player ahead of them. My complaint player, like, why is this person ahead of it? So Hendricks at 84, and I'm sorry, Pat, but Lance Lynn at 75. Lance Lynn has been a solid innings eater, but he doesn't have, like, the killer instinct that Hendricks has, in my opinion. Greater minds could disagree.
Have you seen his beard, though?
I have not seen his beard.
Oh, there you go.
I don't think Kyle Hendricks could grow a beard. And I will say this. I don't think – what is the over-under on number of games which the White Sox wear black when Lance Lynn is pitching? That man – in the heat.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be low.
Just get him out there in the 83s.
Yeah. So, like, okay, let's say he starts 33 to 34 games. I'm saying 10 of those games are in black and they're away games in, like, a colder city.
In a dome or something.
Well, because he pitched in Texas last year. He looked miserable sweating and he kept that super.
I look miserable too, man. I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on. They have Wilson Contreras at 81. In comparison to Will Smith at 50, which makes no freaking sense. JT Realmuto is the best catcher in baseball. I think Willie is second. Yasmani Grandal, I think, is third.
That's where you lost me.
Yeah. Grandal is better catching frame-wise. I don't think he has a better arm than Contreras, and I think the bats are pretty equal. So, and Willie's got a better arm. So, but in any case, both of them, I think, were behind Will Smith.
Grandal was one spot in front, so I'm not as mad about it as you are, but I'm also that one. He's played 90 career games.
Yeah. No, that's...
Like, that doesn't make sense.
Which is, the Kevin Biggio, Bo Bichette rankings, which we'll get into. Another thing is they liked to pair teammates side by side. So, like, Baez 61, KB 62, Bo Bichette in front of both of them. I know they did like a couple of the Mets back to back too. It was just kind of lazy. And then I think the most egregious thing was if they're going to be cheeky with it, they should have put Rizzo at 44 instead of 43 because that's his number. But in any case, Jeff McNeil was ahead of him at 35, the 35th best player in the MLB, Pat. They're only 34 better right now. Jeff McNeil.
A Michael Brantley's right behind him. That doesn't make sense to me either.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like some of these is just those lifetime achievement awards or, maybe, hey, they were just going to get dopes like us complaining about it. If they did, prize was won.
Hey, mission accomplished, right?
Two, I just noticed Pete Alonso's at 66.
So, yeah, behind a lot of guys, really. Behind Jeff
Beavers, McNeil. Torres, Suarez, I mean, I don't know. It's a mess. The whole thing's a mess.
You got the list in front of you. Do a quick scan. How many shortstops are ahead of Tim Anderson?
So let's see. Trey Turner, Xander Bogaerts, Corey Seager, and then we got. Well, I'm not going to count Machado because he doesn't play there anymore. Trevor Story, Lindor, and Tatis. So that is 6, if my math is right. Which
Xander Bogaerts has no business being on the top 100, let alone ahead of Tim Anderson, if you ask me. But
I mean, it is. I mean, shortstop is stacked right now. Like, it's ridiculous just rattling off all those names. So I'm kind of happy Lindor's out of the AL. Tim Anderson has a much better shot at the All-Star game now. But it's, I don't know. I am happy, though, that he was in front of Trevor Bauer. That was a nice little sense of poetic justice I got.
I think we'll have a lot to talk about with Trevor Bauer this year. My other bold prediction on Twitter was that Jake Arrieta will have a better ERA than him. But that's bold. But in any case, he's a clown. For those who are going to continue to tune in, which hopefully is all of you, we're trying to trim down our episodes to less than half hour to make them more digestible and less boring, I guess. So in any case, that concludes our show. We're just under the half an hour mark here. Which is fantastic. We're already in midseason form. Pat, thanks for coming on. Any last thoughts? I don't know if we're going to do any episodes before opening day. Maybe we'll do like a like predictions for the standings coming up right before the season starts. But I'll ask you this, the question you don't know beforehand. What is one thing you're looking for when you're watching spring training games the rest of the way?
So I was actually thinking about this today. I think it's like what I want to see. There's a couple things I'm looking at. One, Andrew Vaughn. I want to see how he's handling major league pitching, because I mean, basically he's getting the keys to the kingdom at DH. I don't care if he's hitting the ball out of the park and then striking out. I just want to see that the at bats are good. And then it's guys like Adam Engel today who hit a home run. It's like seeing those guys kind of make sure that what they did last year in those transformations real. Cause like, I don't care if Jose Abreu or Eloy struggle in spring training. That doesn't really matter to me. I guess maybe Moncada. I want to see how he comes back with COVID, but I don't know. At this point, I'm just watching spring training because I need baseball in my life. That's mainly it.
Yeah. I think the Engel Eden right field competition is probably the most exciting story, in my opinion, coming out from White Sox camp.
It's either that or the DH. There's not a ton of roster battles.
Yeah. What I'm looking for is Adbert Alzolay. He's, I guess, getting tutored by Jake Arrieta, so let's see what happens there. Fun note, the Cubs, I don't think, have anybody that throws over like 92, which is pretty great, actually, which makes me wish they signed John Lester, because I think it would have made them the slowest fastball rotation in like the last, 80 years or something like that, because the whole rotation is throwing between like 86 and like 91.
It's one way to throw off the other team.
Yeah, hopefully. Or maybe they're just throwing beach balls over the play all season. Who knows? But in any case, this is the end of our episode, the Shoeless Goat Podcast off-season review. Thank you so much for tuning in. Pat, it's a pleasure. I can't wait to work a full season of baseball, fingers crossed, weekly.
Yep. Here's to hoping the White Sox can keep up their end of the bargain for me this year after all those down years. But yeah, looking forward to keeping this going.
Absolutely. You can check us out at soundchicago.com. We both write baseball articles, among other things. And remember, everybody, before we do the final memory, you can listen to us on Spotify. What is it, Apple Podcasts, a couple of things too. You can do it on the website as well. And remember, everybody, Yadi Molina is not a Hall of Famer, as we talked about earlier. Have a good week. We will see you when baseball gets real.